The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, welcome to this Thursday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up in just a moment, early voting is in full swing here in Georgia. We caught up with Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron after day one of in-person voting.
We increased our polling locations for Election Day to up to 255 locations. That is a positive because we are now have more locations with fewer voters assigned to each of those locations. That will reduce the lines. The risk in doing that is that we need voters to know before they go.
That conversation coming up in just a moment. And speaking of early voting, polling locations across Metro Atlanta are open today for the fourth day of early in-person voting. That's throughout the entire state. More than 742,000 people have already cast ballots. That is according to the website Georgia Votes. WABE's Emil Moffitt was up early this past Monday for the first day of in-person voting. He spoke with voters at the state's largest voting location, State Farm Arena in Fulton County.
Turnout was really heavy in Fulton County this morning, especially here at State Farm Arena. There were lines outside of the building before the doors officially opened to voters at 8 o'clock this morning. Now, once doors were opened, a few voters went through the lines and did the check-in process, and then it was discovered that there was an issue with some of the voter cards and the poll pads. The poll pads had to be reset. And according to Richard Barron, who is the elections director here in Fulton County, they had to reset all 60 poll pads and re-download the voter database. And once that was done, lines started moving quickly. They had about 45 minutes of a delay where the lines really weren't moving, and we did sense some frustration from voters at that point. But once they got the lines moving, once the technical issue was fixed, then lines started moving quickly, and by 9:30, 10 o'clock, we started seeing the lines dwindle down to just a handful of voters. So with 300 voting machines here, they are able to move people in and out quickly. The voters we talked to, once they got the technical snag figured out, were very happy with the process. They said it was quick and easy to get through. And they enjoyed the experience of voting here at State Farm Arena. And one interesting note, Lloyd Pierce, who's the head coach of the Hawks, is actually working, manning one of the lines, greeting people and ushering them through as they get ready to vote here at State Farm Arena. So the Hawks have really stepped up to the plate here, to borrow a sports metaphor, mixing sports metaphors. They've stepped up to the plate to allow Fulton County voters to vote here early and to allow a lot of their staff to take part in this process of early voting.
That's WABE's Emil Moffitt reporting from State Farm Arena. Now, there are more early voting sites throughout the Atlanta region beyond Fulton County. They'll be open most days between now and October 30th. Voters can cast that vote at any site as long as it's in the county in which they are registered. Y'all got that? And, of course, early voting is encouraged due to the coronavirus. And this while cases in the U.S. are climbing. More than half of U.S. states are seeing an increase in cases, according to the Johns Hopkins COVID-19 tracker. Here in Georgia, the number of COVID-19 cases confirmed each day has remained mostly flat for the last 2 weeks. And typically, the Georgia Department of Public Health provides new numbers each afternoon. So, at the time of this broadcast, here we go. 334,601 COVID-19 cases in total have been confirmed here in Georgia. Now, 29,918 have been hospitalized, and of those, you're looking at 5,546 that were reported as ICU admissions. Also, 7,470 deaths have been recorded since March, and all of this, always, is according to the State Department of Public Health. Now, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp says he will use $1.5 billion, would it be, dollars in federal relief funds to bail out the state's unemployment system. Governor Kemp says the measure will shield businesses from a possible unemployment tax increase. However, Kemp is opting against sending large wave of grants to city and county governments, which prompted this tweet from Savannah Mayor Van Johnson saying, quote, "I am more than disappointed at this absolute reversal at the expense of local governments and local needs," close quote. This is Closer Look. Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE. This is Atlanta's Choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. If you don't know, now you know, early voting is underway. And although there was some expected long lines, maybe some technical glitches and high voter turnout, let's hear from some Fulton County voters.
It was great. It was the best I've ever seen. It was in and out, no hold up, no nothing. It was seamless.
This is my third stop. I stopped near my home and I was told there was a 2.5 hour wait. So, okay, go to work and then go back out. And then I went to the High Museum. Of course, there was a long line and someone said they voted here earlier this morning. It took just minutes.
It was nice. The line, you know, went move fast. The only problem that I seen as far as senior citizens, they need some type of transportation where they can get back and forth.
I'm just glad everybody came out to vote. I got here about 9:30 and I'm just now leaving, 1:21.
Smooth as silk. You're in, you're out. I didn't even stand in a line. It was 1, 2, 3, the steps were clear, the machines are working, the helpers are just wonderful, everything. The experience is A+.
Voices of folks who opted to go in early and cast their ballot, courtesy of our WABE colleagues Emil Moffitt and Lee Oppenheimer. So, the day after the first day of in-person early voting, I spoke with Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron. Well, it's all over, so... No, I'm just kidding. It's only just begun. You heard some of the voices there from voters in Fulton County. What'd you think?
Oh, that's encouraging. I mean, we had yesterday the only day of early voting in 2016's presidential election that beat that day. It was the last day of early voting. We had yesterday 19,716 people vote, and only the last day in 20, that, and that's compared to 14,927 in 2016. Mm-hmm. It was an encouraging turnout, and I think going forward, we're gonna do well.
Let's talk about some of the challenges. There were some technical glitches having to do with the equipment for the poll workers. Was it the iPads? What was the situation here?
The poll pads at State Farm had an issue with the file when we first opened this yesterday morning, and one thing I did before this election was purchase these Cradle Point routers that can help with any issues that pop up with the poll pad. So as soon as we diagnosed what happened, we were able to recover quickly and reset all of the poll pads in State Farm, 60 of them. And we cleared the voters out there within probably 20 minutes. And they ended up processing almost 3,000 voters at State Farm. And other than that opening time, they had no lines. So other sites had lines.
Sure.
And I think one of the things that people should know is they could drive to State Farm and vote and drive home and probably save time over voting at some of the other locations.
Well, here's a question. Why not then make it available on November 3rd?
Well, we don't have a way in Georgia, with the way the law is written, to have anyone vote anywhere on election day. And I know Representative Bruce has been pushing a bill for several years to do countywide polling locations on election day. And when I was an administrator in Texas, we were able to do countywide polling locations on election day. And what that does, the advantage of it, is it eliminates provisional voting almost, because you can vote anywhere. Mm-hmm. So on election day, you have to vote in your precinct. And if you don't vote in your precinct, you have to vote a provisional ballot. Therefore, countywide polling locations are the best way to go. And if we upgraded the technology in Georgia to get cellular poll pads, we could do it here. And so I'm hoping that the legislature will change the law next year and adopt countywide polling locations.
The last few times that we've had a conversation, and we all know what happened in June, and those were not good conversations, but what have been, I guess, the lessons learned here?
Well, I think, you know, June was a challenge unlike anything we've ever gone through here, just because of, you know, losing all the polling places, the poll workers, having very few early voting sites. And then we had a record turnout for a primary, and the Democratic turnout was 4-1 over the Republicans because of the nature of the contests were so competitive on the Democratic side. So it put a lot of stressors in more heavily Democratic populated areas of the county. What we did was make sure that we went back to our normal allotment of early voting sites. And we actually even exceeded what we did in 2016, but we knew we had to, just because our voter count has increased by 250,000 since then as well. So we have more early voting locations than Cobb, DeKalb, and Gwinnett combined, and which is usually, I think, what we have in most presidential elections. But it's especially important this year because everyone seems to be more engaged and motivated to vote than I've ever seen it. And we expect to get an 80% turnout this year, which would set a record. Mm-hmm. The previous would be 74%. I believe it was in 2008 when President Obama was elected. So we increased our polling locations for election day to up to 255 locations. That is a positive, because we are now have more locations with fewer voters assigned to each of those locations. That will reduce the lines. The risk in doing that is that we need voters to know before they go. We need them to check to make sure they know where their polling location is.
So is there a chance, though, that some voters may have a new location than they had either in June or the last general election? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. There's going to probably 33 to 35% of the voters are going to have a new polling location. And we've sent out head of household mailings. We did before the Congressional District 5 election to all of those affected voters. We did it, and we've sent out precinct cards to all of the voters that were affected by all of those changes. Mm-hmm. We sent out a flyer for the head of household that reminded voters to check the My Voter page, the Secretary of State's website, to make sure they know where their Election Day location is. And we've got another postcard going out this week as a reminder too. Mm-hmm. We needed to get more polling locations, and we had planned before the pandemic hit to do it, to get up to maybe 220, but we were able to expand up to 255. And now we only have, I think, 12 locations with more than 5,000 registered voters. And that is going to be a key going forward. Another thing we did was we doubled our inventory of check-in stations, or check-in computers, the poll pads, and that will give us more check-in capacity on election day than we've ever had. Even with the previous system, we didn't have anywhere near this capacity.
That 80% projected voter participation that you just mentioned a while ago, does that also, when you unravel that to each precinct, each location, is that also projected that it'll be 80% of voter participation? Because if you have one precinct or location that has 5,000 registered voters and 80%, that's why I'm asking, are you saying that 80% of those 5,000 could also come out on Election Day or just in general? Because that's a lot of folk.
We're projecting that 80%, so 4,000 out of 5,000 would vote. Mm-hmm. But we're also trying to drive 80% of those voters to vote before Election Day. Because in 2016, we had 64% of the voters voted before Election Day, 59% during early voting, but only 5% absentee by mail. When you look at the way the landscape has changed now, where you have a year where a Democratic runoff for district attorney and sheriff, in that race, more voters cast ballots absentee by mail than they did in the presidential in 2016. So we've already received in excess of 52,000 absentee ballots back. And we're planning to get at least 120 to 150,000 of those back. If we have days during early voting like we had today, I think we're going to hit 350,000 during early voting. If you put another 120 to 150,000 through absentee by mail, that's going to get us in that 450 to 500,000 range. Mm-hmm. And we're projecting about 620,000 people to vote in this election.
Director Barron, for those who have requested an absentee ballot, they should have received it by now if it's been at least more than a month, correct?
So the ballots started going out on the 19th of September. Mm-hmm. Those were for the rollover voters who are 65 and older those voters that are disabled. On the 21st, all of the other ballots started going out. Now they're being mailed. We're still using Runbeck and we're using them through Friday. So those ballots are being mailed from Arizona. And what we're finding, and I requested an absentee by mail just to see how long it would take me to get one. From my processing date, which was the 21st, because that was the first day they could go out, my ballot, I signed up for ballot tracks at the Secretary of State's website so I could track it. Mm-hmm. That ballot was mailed on the 24th, had a postmark of the 26th, and I didn't receive it until October 3rd. So it's 7 to 14 days from what we're hearing from voters. And I think sometimes, you know, maybe in the last couple of days, it might be stretching to 16 days. So, but the best thing to do is to get on ballot, go to the Secretary of State's website and sign up for the ballot tracking, which is called Ballot Tracks, and Tracks is with an X.
Do you recommend that if someone has not received their ballot as of the time of this conversation, which is October 13th, and we still have some time, because for some folks, they say, you know what, I'm just going to wait and now either go early voting or wait till November 3rd. That's going to cause a conflict because in the system you all have that voter requesting an absentee ballot. Does that cause any problems when they get to the location?
That is when people go and cancel their absentee by mail application at the polling site, it does increase the lines. It increases the wait time. Because those voters take a little longer to process. And that's what I think why we're seeing longer lines statewide is yesterday a lot of people canceled their absentee by mail applications. My recommendation is that if you have requested an absentee by mail and it hasn't, you've gone on to the My Voter page, you've seen your issue date, and if you are in that 14, if it's been 14 days since your issue date, I would contact our office, and because we want people to vote by mail who have applied to vote by mail.
Okay.
In order to keep the lines down across the county. And I would say that I'd be speaking for all the other election directors in that regard. It takes time to get the ballot, the application processed, and get it into the mail, and then for the mail to arrive. We've put 38 drop boxes around the county to make it easy for voters to return those. And 90% of voters, once the 38th one goes in Chattahoochee Hills, 90% of the voters are going to be within 3 miles of a drop box. Those are being picked up every day and are also, they're surveilled by a camera, and our teams go pull those out, seal the ballots, bring them back here. We give them credit for voting. And then we can begin scanning those next Monday.
The voice you hear is Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron. And we're talking about what went right and some challenges during the first day of in-person early voting this week and what voters can expect moving forward. And also still some of the controversy surrounding Georgia's new voting machines. Why are these ballots coming from Arizona again? I think I asked you this last time, but I do not remember your answer.
Well, that's the Runbeck is a mailing house that specializes in this, mailing ballots for voters around the country.
They specialize in it.
they do it for other jurisdictions too. I mean, I think the job they do is good. Now, I think under the contract, they are only mailing for Georgia twice a week right now. It's like Mondays and Thursdays, I believe it is. So that's why there is this lag time. So I would encourage people to be patient, and they, you know, if they don't get their ballot, and, you know, and I would also recommend that people apply, if they're going to apply to vote by mail, do it. The legal deadline is the 30th of October, but I wouldn't, if you're going to vote by mail and you do it after October 20th, each day past the 20th, Fulton County will start mailing ballots on October 17th, which is going to reduce the time that it will take for a ballot to get to a voter.
Is it too late to request an absentee ballot?
No, you can request one up until October 30th. The Postal Service recommends October 20th being the last day that you request one. We agree with that. The closer you get to October 30th, the less chance there is for counties to be able to process those, get them into the mail, and for the voter to be able to return them in the mail. If they use the drop boxes, they've got until 7 p.m. on election night to put those in a drop box.
If you're just joining us, I'm joined by the Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron, and we're discussing the start of early in-person voting and what voters can expect on November 3rd. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. This is Closer Look.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Closer Look continues now. You're on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. We'll pick up the conversation with Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron. With these new touchscreen voting machines, because they are connected to printers that can produce a paper ballot for the voters, right? That you all then scan. That's how it works, correct?
Yes.
And then that, in a sense, tallies up the votes or adds up the votes, correct? That's how it works, right? So when you talk about, do you have any privacy concerns with these new machines?
There are some people that have them. We, for Election Day, we've ordered sneeze guards for them that we should have in place for Election Day that is going to, they will give even more privacy to the voters. I mean, if you're standing directly behind a voter, it's hard to see the screen. Mm-hmm. There are places, I mean, if people really want to try to peer behind someone, you can get a view of the screens. The screens are larger, brighter, and bigger than the previous system. But I think as long as the voter's standing in front of it with the, at least in our county, with the wings, you know, next to them, mm-hmm. the view is obstructed generally from somebody that's behind. And actually yesterday, I heard no complaints about that, which I thought to myself last night was noteworthy, because I think when we first introduced them earlier this year during early voting for the March PP presidential preference primary, I did hear that. And so we have tried to position the units in the locations to reduce the visibility. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to get better at that as we gain more experience with this system.
And finally, as we wrap up, Director Barron, a couple of questions here. First of all, there were calls for you to be fired. There was calls for an entire overhaul of the, not just your county, but a lot of counties. During that process from back then to now, what have you learned as the director of the state's largest county in terms of voters?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I've learned is I'm not that when it comes to asking for help and for that, I'm going to do it to make sure the voters in the county are serviced well. I went out and started working with National Vote at Home Institute with regard to absentee by mail. We've got help from the elections group, and they've embedded 3 people in our staff to help look at some of our processes, and they're helping with absentee by mail and some change management. Went out and secured a $6.3 million grant to help pay for different things like a COVID stipend to make sure all of our poll workers are out there, that we were able to recruit them and retain them and to do decontamination at polling places after the election so that we don't experience what we did in June, where we lost a quarter of our polling locations. I think working with the county manager's executive staff and getting input from outside the department about ways we can do things better, and then coordinating with the county manager, Dick Anderson, mm-hmm. and Chairman Pitts to make sure that we have everything at our disposal within the county. I mean, this operation has become so large especially with absentee by mail the way it is now, that it is no longer, we didn't have the staff to do everything that we needed to do. And so, you know, I'm not above asking for help. And that's one of the things that I felt we needed to do. And we're taking it from wherever we can get it in order to pull this election off and make it successful.
Are you still in need of poll workers for November 3rd, or period?
No, we are on target. Our goal was to have all of the poll workers assigned by the 19th next week, and we're on track to have that done and have all the poll workers trained by November 1st. And so we are on track for that. We've got technicians for every polling place. We are also going to have a canceled ballot station in every polling place. We're going to have line managers at all of those polling locations as well. And so I think in the end, we will have 2,785 poll workers assigned, but we're going to have, with the line managers and some of these extra people that will be in the field, we're probably going to have between 3,500 and 3,800 people out in the field on election day to make, and that's going to be an increase probably of 1,400 to 1,500 over what we had in the 2016 presidential. Mm-hmm. So the project, just running this election, has become a much larger job than it has. And this new voting system is, I think we, now that everybody's used to it, working with it, it is doing its job. It's the machines are performing well. I think everyone's comfortable with them. It is a labor intensive, resource intensive system. Mm-hmm. We have to throw a lot of resources at it to make it work, but it provides the paper trail that many mm-hmm. voters wanted.
Let me ask you this. Given all the concerns, do you think we will have all of the results tabulated on November 3rd?
I'll tell you what we're going to have tabulated by election night. Mm-hmm. We'll start scanning all of our absentee by mail on, we'll start opening them on Monday, the 19th, and start scanning them all the way through until we're concluded. But everything we scan between Monday and election day at probably 2 o'clock, that will be released at around 7 o'clock on election night. That should be in excess of 95% of all of our absentee by mail ballots. We will close out early voting, the early voting units at 7 p.m. on election night, because according to the law, we can't do it beforehand. And I hope that's another thing the legislature will change, because in other states, you can close down your early voting units after early voting closes. Mm-hmm. That way, and we would, so we'll be able to release those early voting results probably by 8 to 8:30. And between those two, that's probably going to be about 75% of our entire vote total that we should have out by 8:30 on election night. Then the election day precincts will start coming in. And once those come in by election night, at whatever time, midnight, 1 a.m., we should have all of our election day results in. And that should be probably 97, 98% of our total vote count. And what will count after that will be everything that comes in on the drop boxes to the drop boxes on election day, and everything we receive absentee by mail on election day, and provisional ballots. That'll be what remains. So most of our vote count will be in on election night. And I would say that the other counties in Georgia, it will be in a similar position to us. Most of our results will be in by 11 o'clock. I mean, I would say we'll probably have 90% of our election day results in by 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. What it depends on how long the lines are at 7 o'clock and how long it takes the polling places.
Yeah, because you all have to, folks are given the right to cast a ballot, even if after that 7 p.m., time,
as long as they're in line.
And we know that some folks were in line till 1 o'clock in the morning. Do you anticipate that could happen?
Yeah, during early voting in June, yes.
Fulton County Board of Registration and Elections Director Richard Barron discussing the start of early in-person voting and, of course, what voters can expect leading up to November 3rd and November 3rd. Director Barron, thank you so much for taking the time. You always make time for us. I appreciate it.
I like coming on your show. I enjoy the conversation. So anytime.
That's it for this edition of Closer Look, which is produced by Grace Walker and LaShawn Hudson. Our engineer is Shelley Canavy. If you missed any of today's program, it's online at wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, you can listen to Closer Look weeknights at 8 p.m. and listen whenever you want, because Closer Look is now available as a podcast. Just visit NPR One or your favorite streaming app and subscribe. This is 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.